F1, number 11B.
He always told us, well, he said often to a few of us, or perhaps also to all of us, he said that since he was in Christian Science, there were not many days that he didn't handle evil systematically. You see? So he did recruit himself unto a specific law. Once it was the law of Amos, very often lately, and only lately, well, lately when I speak of John in his later days, he used then the law of Obadiah. And we will come to that. But just to say, naturally, it isn't that it is always Amos and Amos and Amos. But as we go on, we just make those exercises, and the more we recruit ourselves under one category, until we see that category clearly, the better for us. Now, for this evening, you know your synonyms. That is always the basis. The law of Amos says, because always out from God, never from anything else, always from God. God and its hosts is a law of annihilation to everything unlike God and its hosts. So simple as simple. Now take that thing and then say, well, what does it mean? But always stay within that short frame of that law. Don't go further than that, you see. Don't go further. That's what he did, usually, John Dorley. He said, well, what does God mean? That God and its hosts. Well, then he would say, well, God and its hosts is mind and its ideas, spirit and its ideas, soul and its ideas, and principle and its ideas, and so on. Is a law of annihilation to everything unlike that mind and its hosts. Well, what is it? We know it because we know the counterfeits of the synonyms, you see. But the variation, actually, because mind has hundreds of ideas and spirit has hundreds of ideas and hundreds of opposites, I can never tell you how to do it because every day you will do it differently, just as it comes. So do it, say, in every synonym for 2 or 3 minutes, all what comes to your thought naturally and lovingly into your thought as ideas of mind, and see that these ideas of mind, say the idea of power, that mind and it has the idea of power and manifests itself as the idea of power, and that is a law of annihilation to every opposite, to opposite of all, of what? You see, to the power of mind. It's a law of annihilation to any so-called will power, evil power, political power, physical power, will power, power of hypnotism, power of medicine, power of matter, whatever comes to you. You fill your thought that way. Then you go on to the next idea of mind, mind and its hosts. Well, mind is intelligence. So that mind and its intelligence is a law of annihilation to everything which is opposite to mind and its intelligence. Therefore, it annihilates every so-called material intelligence, human reason, human wisdom, the wisdom of the world, that it annihilates any sense of lack of inspiration, lack of intelligence, and so on. Well, it's so wide, you see. But if we don't culture these laws in this way, we are always just on the surface of things. We just go a little bit, touch a little bit everywhere. But it never really goes deep down until we are conscious. You see, I didn't make a very good demonstration. I start right away. No good. So, you see, the prophet is that which is conscious of the spiritual facts. Definition was the disappearance of material sense before the conscious fact of spiritual truth. So how shall we culture that divine consciousness? We can only culture that divine consciousness by going constantly out from God and think about God as God and like God and for God, and that fills consciousness higher, broader and fuller and better. So this would be perhaps quite a nice exercise. See, it begins, so then you come into the rhythm of this prophet, and you will, after a few days when it does that, one begins to feel that one gets strong. You will see that. See, at the beginning, I just tell you that out of experience from other students, at the beginning, usually this happens, that you begin to exercise in this law, and after a minute or two your thought wanders off to quite something else. Wanders off to a problem, or you say, well, how could I use it now here and there? You see, well, that's naturally, it's natural. But that doesn't train us into the system. And your thought wanders off. Now, if one has a problem, let's deal with that problem as a problem. But the groundwork which we have to do is to be trained into the principle of this science. And so we always have, so to say, two sets or two categories of metaphysical work which we do. One set, so to say, is to handle the claims which are showing themselves as they come along, because we want to get rid of them. But besides that, we must do perhaps... a fundamental, general, scientific work which is not concerned with any specific problem which we have to handle. What was that term? Basic research. You see, we must have some basic research. We can't go on always just to be what people say, to be practical. It's nice to be practical and to solve the practical problem, but that doesn't lead us further. That doesn't lead us to the 4,000-year period where we handle the claim that there will be ebb and flow. As long as we only handle practical problems which creep up, and then we handle them, and then we sit down and say, now that's done, that's fine. Now. And then we wait until the next problem creeps up, and then we handle it, and then fine, you see. But that's no progress. Besides that, we should really be recruited onto a principle and go into the school of principle where we do basic research and basic training in our system. And what we do this week is really that, is to introduce you into this basic research and to its basic training. And you will see, and I'll come back to what I really wanted to say, you will see that at the beginning it's not easy. Your thought may go off. Well, it doesn't matter. Don't be discouraged. Just try it again next day and the next day. And it may take perhaps even weeks until suddenly you find out that you can sit easily down and think impersonally, without any having any specific problem before you, to handle evil generally in your thought. And I would make any bet with any one of you, when he comes to that point that he does that slowly he begins to feel that he's stronger, that he's firmer, that he's freer, that he's more secure. It does something to each one of us, little by little. Don't expect that heaven will just flow down the next day. But the raindrops come down gently upon each one, upon the earth beneath. And it drops down as, how does it go? Yes, as gentle rain, you see. So my knowledge of Shakespeare is not so good at all, but I know it's in The Merchant of Venice. and that I can make any bet with you that you will feel that, but it needs some getting into the rhythm of it. You see, it's like somebody who begins to play music or the violin. It takes some time to get the tones really clearly out, you see. But then he has it. And he can't lose it anymore. Then Amos comes along and says, "Now I have planted you firmly into the ground and nothing can root you up anymore." So it's worthwhile doing it. Now, I really should give Obadiah a chance, but before I do that, I must say one thing more about Amos. You see, and that's just in connection with this. Namely, you remember how Mr. Dawley, in his practice book, on page... Peggy, the new edition, has it the same paging, or is it... It hasn't the same paging. Oh. Well, in the old, perhaps you all have the old edition. The old edition, it's on page 134, or 35 and 36, 135 and 136, and then on various other places, but there especially for about a page and a half. Perhaps when you are at home or so, next week or so, perhaps you read it again. And there it's that passage where he lays very much stress on the fact, you see, that the human mind is only conscious of about 10% of error, and that 90% of error is more or less unconscious error. Now, this is so true, you see, everyone who is in practice knows that and sees that a patient can never tell us really, or very seldom tell us the real reason of the error. He always will just tell what he knows about error, what he thinks is wrong. But that is only about 10% of the whole erroneous consciousness. And all the rest of the other 90%, well, neither he nor I knows if it's 90 or 95 or 85, but it's a high percentage. Out of our practice, we know that that's a very big percentage is unconscious error. And you see, if we wouldn't have the law of Amos, we could only handle the conscious error. We could only handle that error which has already gone to the point of a crisis in Hosea, where it has already beaten against the law of God and has come to a doom, which we call then disease or bankruptcy or a breakdown or anything like that. So up to Amos, we only would be awakened to handle conscious error, but not unconscious error. But unconscious error is the much bigger problem in our world today and in each individual one. That which individually each one really should handle is much bigger than what he is conscious of. See, somebody may be conscious of and says, "Well, I'm impatient, or I'm a bit angry, or I get up the walls very quickly," or anything like that, or I have always a little bit stomach trouble or so. But that is so little compared what he should work out. What he should work out. And how should he work it out if he doesn't know it? That latent error of which we were saying, you see, when I was reading that passage from Mrs. Zeddy as the introduction to Amos, where she said that inaudible voice of truth reaches our continent and ocean, and that it brings the latent error from undercover. And that latent error are those 90% which latent are in us and form our character and form our way of acting and reacting without that we know it. So what can handle that? That can only be handled through this law of Amos, because that law of Amos is universal and general. You see, the law, as we have said, you should perhaps try to do it tonight, is a general law. It hasn't anything to do with the present world situation or with your health or with your family condition or the business or anything like that. It's a general law. And so through Amos, we really handle the whole 100% of Aaron. Because we handle it generally, we have the true fact of mind and see that that true fact of mind handles anything which is unlike mind. We really go at anything unlike mind. And so in this law of Amos we find therefore really what he says, our safety. We are planted into the land and nothing will anymore uproot it. Up to that point we may perhaps be planted 10% into the land, but 90% cannot uproot us again. So Amos really is that wonderful prophet, or I would say the law of Amos is that wonderful law of this prophecy which helps us to deal with the whole of error. Now, this point I think we can't stress too much. When one is in the practice, I think practically every day or practically in every case, I think in every case more or less, I would be surprised if I could remember any case where it didn't happen. But the patient would either say, well, I know why I'm ill, I have done this and this wrong. Or he would say, why should I be sick, why should something be wrong? I have never thought of it. I have never thought of this disease, and now I have got it. Something is wrong, something is fishy about this science, you see. It's always about, because he always thinks about his 10%. And it's funny how to see another point which seems to be so difficult for students of Christian Science to grasp. They always think that they only get sick or they only get trouble because of their own wrong thoughts. Their own wrong thoughts. They say, where have I been wrong? That's the first thing they say. Where have I been wrong? But Christian Science never says, you are only down in the pit because you have done something wrong. Christian Science always puts everything back to animal magnetism and to mortal mind. Always back to those counterfeits of mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth and love. He never puts down what have you thought wrong and right about it. If we would only reduce it to what we have thought right and wrong about it, then we would have just a mental science, an individual mental science. But Christian Science is a science of mind, you see, the mind with a capital M. And not of what somebody thinks wrong and thinks not wrong. And so it is so difficult with often to make, first of all, to relieve a patient and say, well, you see, things happen in the wrong way with you, not only because you may have thought something wrong or because you have done intentionally something bad or so, but because there is an individual claim of evil, a collective claim of evil, a universal claim of evil, nowadays a cosmic claim of evil. Not you. You are not the creator of sin. Sin existed long before, what does she say? Sin existed long before the concept of sin has been, was formed, you see. Sin existed long before the concept of sin has been formed. And this subject, you see, of seeing that we don't handle the patient's wrong thought only and uniquely, but that the handling of evil is always a misunderstanding of God. What we handle is, if I say it wrong but it conveys something, we handle God. We handle the claim that God can be misunderstood. And that misunderstanding and that misconception that is something which can be individual, but mostly it is collective, and mostly, very mostly, it's universal and cosmic. See, for instance, an individual error is, yes, when I consciously or unconsciously have done something wrong, but because of what? Well, it can be because I'm deeply one, so to say, with a collective error. I'm a Swiss. That's an error, you know. That's a very great error. If I always claim I'm a Swiss, I am claiming a very great error. I claim all the errors that are attributed to the Swiss, and there are quite a few, you see. And that's a collective error, you see, because each country claims to have a characteristic and have a certain type of people who react in a certain way, who have a certain horizon, so to say, in one's mind and so on. Well, we belong to a family. That's collective. And because we belong to a certain family, we react like this and not like that. Well, that's not the truth, you see. It's a collective error again. Or we belong to a religion, and therefore we act according to that religion. We belong to a certain race, and so we act according to the beliefs of that race. But they are all beliefs. Our job is to react like God, not like a Swiss, and not like the family Kaplan, not like the white race, and not like those who belong to a Christian Zionist church or so. We should react like God. All the others are beliefs. All are classifications of beliefs. We may suffer under the belief which is collective, say, under an epidemic, you see. There is an epidemic is always a collective belief. And somebody comes along and says, now, why did I get the flu? I not even knew that there was a flu in town. See? And in that way, you see, we see that most, really, of all the evil that we have to handle are usually universal. It's, say, that it's under the category of heredity. That's a universal claim. That's not an individual claim. That's a universal claim. Or say that we are under the claim of accident. We have an accident. So when people have an accident, they say, why did I have an accident? I never thought of it. I was so happy and harmonious. Yes, but there is a universal claim of accident. And until we handle that universal claim of accident within us, we are subject to it. That's quite clear. If I think of it or if I don't think of it. And so is the universal claim, say, of astrology. And that's a bigger claim than what each one of us thinks it is. A much bigger claim. And has much more influence on our character, on our way to act, on our way to live, and so on. Much more than we think. Who handles astrology every day? No one of us, I guess. I haven't. But I do very often. You see? But we should do it, really, very often. And only that way we get away that we are so as the sign of the zodiac tells us to do. You know, when I went through class with John Dolley, he told us about all these things. And the first thing I did was to go home and handle every day that I was a Swiss. Have you ever handled that you are English? Well, I did that. I'm so happy I did. And I think a little bit I lost it of being Swissish. Too Swissish. But when he was talking about these beliefs, you see, I just could see, yes, those mountains, those heavy mountains, that narrowness, that sense of limitation, because we have no natural raw material, we have to work hard like Negroes to get somewhere, we have to use our intelligence because we don't have any other values and so on. I began to see a whole lot of canker worms and palmer worms and so creeping up as so-called Swiss. And I got quite a kick out of it to handle that. I left it then at that time. Sorry to say it, but it's good to do it. And I think it does, little by little, free us from these collective beliefs, from the national beliefs, from these universal beliefs. And that's what we can do when we handle it through Amos. I wouldn't know how to do it through any other law than through Amos. If we can't do it through Hosea, we can't do it through Joel, we can do it through Amos. Because Amos goes to the whole claim of an opposite to God. Mind handles and annihilates all that which is unlike mind. And I can, because I know my synonyms, my opposites, I can go through them one by one. Every day something new springs up into my mind, and something, another phase and another claim just comes up naturally, and I handle it. Then I go on to spirit, and I see what is spirit, and I fill my thoughts with spirit and what it is, and I say that's the law of annihilation to everything unlike spirit. What is unlike spirit? I don't leave it just by saying unlike spirit, because it doesn't mean very much until one has that consciousness, what is unlike spirit? And so I go to the counterfeits of spirit. So that's also very clear.